Access Cast, an Accessibility initiative, presents Unstoppable Mindset, the podcast where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet. Hi, I'm Michael Hinkson, Chief Vision Officer for Accessibility and the author of the number one New York Times bestselling book, Thunderdog, the story of a blind man, his guide dog, and the triumph of trust. Thanks for joining me on my podcast as we explore our own blinding fears of inclusion, unacceptance, and our resistance to change. We will discover the idea that no matter the situation or the people we encounter, our own fears and prejudices often are our strongest barriers to moving forward. The Unstoppable Mindset podcast is sponsored by Accessibility. That's ACCESSIBE. Visit www.accessibility.com to learn how you can make your website accessible for persons with disabilities and to help make the internet fully inclusive by the year 2025. Glad you dropped by. We're happy to meet you and to have you here with us. Hi, I'm Michael Hinkson, and welcome to another edition of Unstoppable Mindset, the podcast where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet. And today, unexpected in a lot of ways, partly because up until about a week and a half ago, I didn't expect that I would have our guest on today, but here he is. I would like you all to meet Gal Bereket. Gal is in Israel, and Gal works for Accessibility. I've told you all a little bit about Accessibility in the past. Accessibility is a company that has created a variety of products and systems to make websites more usable so that we can achieve our ultimate goal of making the internet fully accessible by 2025. And one of the people who's going to help with that is Gal, who is our guest today. Gal, welcome to Unstoppable Mindset.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for having me. This is such a pleasure having to continue the conversations, the ongoing conversations with you.
Well, and we don't get to talk nearly enough, so here's a chance to do some of that. So you are in Israel, so right now it's probably something like about 6:36 or 6:37 in the evening.
Oh, and so daylight saving brought us 1 hour back. So right now we're actually 5:30 p.m. It's still half of the day. Yes.
So did daylight saving just end for you?
Just ended or just started. It's getting dark earlier.
Yeah. And we do that next Sunday. Okay. So we'll catch back up to you. I don't know why we can't have a standard in the world, but it's the way it is. Well, so tell me a little bit about you. So you're from Israel.
So I'm from Israel. I had the privilege of joining Accessibility in early May this year, mid-May this year. Previous to Accessibility, a little bit perhaps about my background in the military, which provides a little bit of both spice and interest to the role. I served in the Israeli Elite Intelligence Unit called 8200, where just a few great things that the military experience that is so far removed for someone who didn't get to go through it, but it's essentially through college. However, you are being put in stressful situations, and I had the privilege in the age of 19 to already have 200 to 400 people under my supervision. In addition, you get to work in the army on trying to focus on solution rather than the problem. That's something that helps to cultivate myself throughout the years, which then led a little bit further about my personal background. Graduate from Tel Aviv University with a law major, had to work in Israeli Parliament, outside Knesset, Parliament members in the Israeli Knesset, and helping them legislate laws. It's something that in Israel also it's important to share that from the getting a degree standpoint, You know how in America you go to preschool at pre-law and then a law school. In Israel, when you finish with the military service and you go to university, you automatically immediately choose a profession, if you will. And hence the law major that I did allowed me to immediately pursue the degree itself and practice law. However, prior to practicing law, as in my last year of school, I was working on two companies at the time, and one of those two of those companies actually launched, but I had to make a decision because I couldn't operate both at the same time. I chose the company that Accessibility acqui-hired. It was a company in the hospitality industry. We were working on trying to help bridge the communication gap. How funny, between guests and hoteliers, or between guests and staff, and between people, essentially, too, because communication is almost key to everything. And I'm sure we're going to talk about it a little bit over our chat. And it, but in addition, the bridging the communication gap during my time in the Israeli Parliament, you could see that if the minister didn't necessarily, or the Knesset member didn't necessarily came, or a parliament member with a judicial background, the ability to legislate a law becomes cumbersome, and hence you need a mediator to digest what you but what the request was created and then able to push it forward. So this is a little bit, so just to sum up a little bit about me, some army time, great experience, some Tel Aviv University, growth towards working within touching the bills themselves, understanding the cumbersome, and hence why I get one of the many reasons why I'm attracted to accessibility, because there's so little tweaks that can be done in order to make so many people's lives so much better.
I'm curious, you raised something that just sort of prompts a question. Serving in the military, that's something that everyone in Israel does, right?
Right.
When they're growing up. What that's something that is really foreign to us over here in the United States, in that not everyone is required to do that. What do you think the real value of serving 3 years in the military gave you, or why do you, what do you think about having had to do that?
I think that when a teen get to the age of 18, 17, and starts a process in which there is an entity called the army that's working on or on identifying various aspects about your personality, IQ, and capabilities, is when it's today, thinking about in hindsight, it's crazy. Back then, it seemed normal. It seems like I'm being categorized in order to go to a place and trying to optimize me as a resource, and trying to optimize the skill set that I bring to the table and see how it can help the entire entity to grow. And within those 17 to between 17 to 18, as you go through the process, getting into the military service, which is, you know, like applying to college, like sending out those envelopes, when you there is but it's but in an opposite direction, you are being then targeted by the army in various units that you can serve in, whether it's combat or non-combat alike. Within the army, then you get to have when in contradictory to college, there is much more discipline, much more discipline in turn, not necessarily the discipline that you would feel or think about when I say the word discipline, but more order, organization skills. You have for Israel is a country that known for its a formality. The army is a place where formalities finally get structured. There is different entities that are in charge of different things in the army. And then you get to understand how to, when you get out of the army, how to better succeed within the commercial world, because you already understand some of the how to, within the intelligence unit in particular, how to communicate well. You are being trained how to be in charge of large portion of people at the same time and mitigate issues. You are becoming a mini CEO of a small medium enterprise company when you are between the ages of 18 to 22. And when you get released, you're like, whoa, what just happened? Did I just do that? Did I learn all those things and I can't share it with anyone in the world?
But you learned a lot of responsibility. You learned how to do those, which I'm assuming that you feel were very much a life-building experience for you and one that you value.
Oh, 100%.
100%. So it's something you wouldn't change for the world.
That is true. That is true. I can't. It's like they say, I don't regret things I did. I regret things I didn't do. Uh-huh. The things that I did was part of the many actions that were supposed to bring me to the person that I am today. So I try to not regret my actions that I already took.
What do you regret that you didn't do?
Ooh, I just dug myself in my own hole.
Sorry. it just popped out. It's a great line, and I think you're absolutely right. I once went to a meeting, and the people it was actually a church, and the pastor said, you know, the problem with how we view mistakes is that when you make a mistake, if you legitimately make a mistake, you've made the mistake. Now the question is, what are you going to learn from it? But you can't argue or spend your whole life worrying about the mistake you made. It's how you progress from it. And it's the same sort of thing. We learn, we make choices, and we do things. And once we've done them, they are part of us. But the real question is, what do we learn? Or as you think back after doing something, what is it that I didn't do that I could have done? And that's something that we're going to talk about in the book. I mentioned that we're beginning to write a new book. And that's one of the issues that we're going to talk about, is that the reality is it's not the choices so much we make. It's what do we learn from them so that we can make better choices.
Right. Look at the intersection in hindsight and evaluate how we actually in practicality took the whatever action that we were supposed to take, and then understand whether it was right or wrong, or how could we have became better. Every intersection probably yield an opportunity to self-observation.
It should. And one of the things that I experience is a lot of people don't take that time later to analyze what they do and what they did. And as I put it, I'm my own worst critic. I like to record speeches that I give, and these podcasts I listen to, because I learn from them and I recognize that I am and should be harder on myself than anyone else could possibly be if I learn to do self-analysis. And I think that's an important part of life that all of us can learn to develop, because when we analyze ourselves, if we look each day back at what we did and what we didn't do that we could have done or should have done, that is what helps us move forward and enhances, or can help us move forward and enhance our lives.
Right. When we were consciously making decisions, when we were unconscious of the decisions that were taking place and we just let ourselves be part of. I agree. Michael, my only advice to you is just be constructive with yourself if you're your worst critic. Give yourself, just make sure that you are not taking yourself too much down before, so you'll be able to actually get up.
Yeah, I think that's the point, is that when you're your own worst critic, it's the point that you will see things maybe sooner than other people will, or they don't want to tell you. Right. But if you see it, the question is how you then deal with it. And you're absolutely right. This being your own worst critic isn't to tear yourself down, but it's to give you the opportunity to say, how do I handle that different next time?
Right. Exactly.
And then remember it next time. That's the other part of the challenge and the problem. And it sounds like with your experiences and so on, having been in the military and gone through that life experience for several years, you've been put in a situation where you get to analyze a lot.
That's true. I also, every place I go, every every interaction that I encounter, I make sure to, I need to make sure to be alert and keen. And not necessarily for something bad to happen. Proactive listening is something that, yeah. that the army is also, not that the army was promoting initially when I was there, but leaving the army and being in a, keep endorsing proactive listening. That's, I think, where the most progress that can be done on an individual basis, because then when actual conversations and decision making are actually being taken under as conscious as they should, and then you can actually move forward, learn processes, look at things from a retrospective standpoint, create proper hindsight, and progress.
And that's all we can ask ourselves to do.
That's true.
And that makes perfect sense. Were you ever in combat in the military, or were you removed from that somewhat?
So thankfully in the Elite Intelligence Unit, I needed to facilitate the teams that went. I was an officer of operations, and part of my role was to make sure that the people that are going to various locations that aren't necessarily as places that they want to be in, or places that the people that are there wants them to be there. I needed to create, to make sure that everyone will, that need to make sure that there will be safety for everyone and constant communication, the hospitality and the housing would work great, and people would come, we'll be able to come back safely on both ends. That's mainly was my, as an office of operational person. I wasn't first to come, but I needed to be in charge of those who went there.
Yeah. Well, and that's a pretty awesome responsibility and an interesting skill to learn, which I'm assuming was very helpful to you once you got out of the military, because you learned how to deal with people and you learned to understand what people think and how they think somewhat.
However, in life after the army, things are a little bit more relaxed.
Yes,
the decisions are important, but they are not necessarily. Some of them are life changing, or some of them are, but they can be taken with some thought behind them, and it's not necessarily.
I hear what you're saying. It's different. Do you think a lot of people forget a lot of the lessons that they learn in the military, given the way you described it? Yeah.
I think that life is dissected into chapters, and each chapter that you go through for, youth, growing up, youth, then in Israel, it's the military time that is in the background, but you yourself are growing from 82 to 22, 23, depends how many years you decided to participate in the army. And there's all those intersection, all those parts are parts where you grow from, grow of, evaluate whether this is the person. And I don't like to speak about myself in a third, but is Gal from the military is the same Gal, is the same person that he is today? Or is there just a bunch of skill set and learnings and morals that I can take with me as part of who I am, and then learn how to utilize them with the person that grew immensely, yeah, since that time in the past. So yeah, this life is interesting this way. It throw you into chapters that you don't necessarily know when it starts, when it ends, because sometimes inertia just comes in. And so being conscious, is continuing our previous anecdote, is really important.
I know for me, having gone through the university and gotten a master's degree in physics, one of the things that I tell people is, I don't use the physics directly today, but the disciplines, the mindset, the thought process that I learned being very heavily involved in science and the philosophy of science, and having had the opportunity to study how people in science think and so on, has helped immensely. So physics is something that I think was extremely valuable to me, although I don't use it because my life took some other turns. The skills and the disciplines I learned from it are extremely valuable, and I wouldn't trade them for the world.
Would you have, if you could have gone back, would you have taken the route of pursuing physics? Or are you like just the morals from it?
No, I would still have pursued physics. I learned a lot that I don't think I could have learned without being involved with it. And again, when I was taking physics, I didn't know that my life would change in some of the ways that it did. Excuse me, but it did change. And so it's all about growth, and it's all about learning how to accept that growth and accept the choices that you make. I believe that I can trace a lot of my life back to choices that I made and how one choice led to another choice. And I think that's important for us to be able to do. And I don't say that in a negative way, but rather that one choice led to another choice that led to another choice. And along the way, I learned from each one, which also caused me to help make the choices that I made.
I understand and agree in 1,000%.
So you went through the military and then you came out, and I'm fascinated by the fact that then when you went through university and graduated with a law degree and then started working in the legislature, I came at the legislature from a different standpoint in that although I was in the sciences and so on, I also joined the National Federation of the Blind, a consumer organization, the largest civil rights organization for blind people. And we're very much all about dealing with getting appropriate legislation to deal with the civil rights of blind people. And so was very heavily involved for many years in various ways, working with Congress and state legislatures. And so to understand the law process and some of the political negotiations. It's a fascinating world. Unfortunately, I think that it's changed a lot, at least in this country, in the last 40 years or so. It's become much more divisive and much more political than it really should be. And you almost get to the point where you wonder if people are really looking out for the country anymore.
Yeah, I think it's a sickness of every country. I think it's a sickness of either the parliamentarian system or the presidential system, the ones that you that America has, the presidential system with the two houses, which automatically creates a lot of stagnation. The fact that there are two entities is that are part of the process of making a decision. And in Israel, the situation is the same in a parliamentarian system, but different because there are many parties that are supposed to form a coalition. And it happens to be that the minority then controls, they has an unproportional power over the coalition. And then not the your vote does not necessarily provide this, the request of what it is that you are voting for.
It's interesting. I think you raise a good point, but it also goes back to mindset. If everyone is really looking at it from a mindset of, yeah, we have different beliefs, we have different points of view about what needs to be done, but we want to do what is right for the benefit of our country, that's a lot different than I want to do what's right as far as I'm concerned so I can win and gain more power. And that's where I think we've all diverged and deviated, that there's too much, I've got to be the winner. I've got to be the one to get the power. And the other side shouldn't have any power because they're just totally wrong, as opposed to recognizing that there's value on both sides.
Yeah, yeah. The political sphere is a sphere that provides a lot of desperation and inconvenience. And of this, and things are so simple to just make them as you are saying they should be. But, you know, life, I find myself, and I think I shared with you in our previous conversations, focusing on the things that I can change, focusing on the thing, whether it within myself or within my surroundings, I found myself getting as being less involved in politics with time, speaking of the different entity, or even removing myself almost completely in order to focus on my current life at Accessibility, the efforts that I'm doing to help that the company is doing and letting me be part of it, of making as cliche as it sounds, making the world a better place, focusing on just, you know, the stuff that are in front of me, or even a year ahead or 2 years ahead, are within my capacity and bandwidth to influence.
Yeah, you can worry all day about everything that goes on in the world, or you can, excuse me, or you can learn to focus on the things that you have control over and not worry about the rest. And all too often, we focus on way too much stuff, and we have no effect or control over any of it. If we would learn more to focus, we would drive ourselves less crazy.
That's probably true.
So you went, you came out of college and you said you had been involved in starting two companies. What were the two companies?
So one company was in the fashion industry. What we were doing, we used AI and image recognition and machine learning. We were helping. It was several years ago. Now it's a little bit more trending all over. But people that got into fashion blog websites were looking at different items and not necessarily knew where to shop them, or even looked at their friends on social media or various pictures and couldn't know what items are they wearing that they'd like to see where it was purchased from. What we build an engine that is able to determine through image recognition where is the picture is taken from, or where is the what item is the person wearing, and where and the list of potential stores that is able to then facilitate that. It was heavy tech, and that went on that sphere.
And now you didn't write code.
No, I didn't write. I was helping. So it was at the beginning of the road. I was able to form the team, create internal infrastructure and processes, and then I learned that it was less prominent in Israel to start with. So we applied to an acceleration program in Boston. However, at the same time, in the different company that I ended up pursuing for the next 5.5 years until Accessibility, at the time that I had to make a decision when this company was moving to Boston, the other company got accepted to an acceleration program in Berlin. So both received global recognition, and now it was a time to choose. One that had a very tough choice, great team on both ends. It's just that fashion never was my expertise. So hence, it was a very easy move towards hospitality, service industry, AI, bridging the communication gap, things that are a little bit more felt more in my day-to-day, and hence I invested my commercial life to a degree into that.
So what was the hospitality company about?
So when guests comes to a hotel today, they go to their rooms, and if you know, let's say before COVID, before digitization went on a rapid scale up, before COVID, when guests were finished their booking, there was no way for the hotelier to properly start the communication with the guest and allowing the guest to get a seamless experience as they book. They can request the stuff they want pre-arrival. They can continue the conversation. They know that when they get to their room, they don't necessarily need to use the landline. They can use their own mobile device. through their own medium of choice, where it be WhatsApp, WeChat, Line, Facebook, etc. And then as they leave the hotel, they can decide whether they want or not to continue or not continue the conversation. So we replace the old landlines that are in the room to convenience of not without the need to download any app on your mobile device. You are able to then communicate with the front desk and request whatever it is that you need, or maintenance or housekeeping and everything from the palm of your hands without the need to download a thing.
So you did that for a period of time. Is that company still working today? Is it still doing the things and setting up the procedures that you started?
And no, the company had a great time until and was working in various places globally until COVID hit. When COVID created a big impact for the hospitality industry. And however, we were able to find our way through it, and were able to find create the right go-to-market strategies and create the right partnerships. One of these partnerships and ongoing conversations led to the conversations with the with Dekel, Shir, and Gal. That conversation then emerged into more than just a conversation, in which the guys told us, why wouldn't you guys want joining us? Help us utilize AI, bridging that we also need to bridge the communication gap to a different degree. And we need a team that scaled in the past in various aspects and is able to help us scale further from what the team was amazingly able to accomplish with accessibility.
So though dealing with internet access is a lot different than dealing with the hospitality industry, what piqued your interest about what Shir, Gal, and Dekel were doing with accessibility?
So many things. I'll start with the fact that the vision draws your attention, because it's almost impossible to do. And when something is impossible to do, it's worthwhile to get a hang of it and to try and do it by ourselves. The meeting with Shir, Gal, and Wiesel, the motivation and inspiration that came out of the meeting was knew that this is a company we would like to be part of. And then perhaps lastly, but most importantly, my wife's mother, who's a social worker in New York City, in which she works directly one-on-one with people with disabilities. Throughout our time together, there were ongoing conversations, and I got to hear secondhand, not firsthand, challenges, barriers of people, and to have the opportunity back then to have a conversation about how to have a humble part in entering an entity that is working to do good was a no-brainer. We are providing our ability to provide service, of course, but moving away from one industry to the web accessibility industry, allowing us to also see how hotels are not necessarily within compliance, are allowing us to see that web accessibility is a bigger picture, as the world focusing on digitizing itself, and as accessibility is taking a big stage within a big role on the stage of working on making the web accessible. And the world wide web is such a big word. We're making the world wide web accessible. So you ask what brings me to the company. Being part of an organism that's what it strives for, to take this www and making it accessible, and learning that as I got to accessibility, how big the problem is, and that's something that I wasn't aware of. I was aware that it's there. I was aware that some people are facing it. I wasn't aware that it's growing, and I wasn't aware that it's that it's how much it affects the day-to-day life. And as I started the training at Accessibility, and I was giving the opportunity of speaking with people with visually impaired, all those technicalities of challenges that people are facing, I knew that this is where I am supposed to be. This is what I need to serve, and this is a company I want to utilize my skill set in order to help grow.
Well, and the fact is that, as you stated, what we call the accessibility gap is growing because of the number of websites that are being created every minute, every day, and how small the number of those websites actually intentionally do what's necessary to bring access in. And I think one of the important concepts to remember about accessibility is you can have all the standards in the world. You can have all of the requirements that define what access means. But access ultimately is about how usable is the website.
Right.
And that's where it really comes. It's all about, can people use the website? And do the standards make the website as usable as it should be? Or is there more to it? And there is more to it. The standards are a great guideline, which is why we have today what we call the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. But the fact is that it's all about usability. And I think that's been a very strong growth area for Accessibility, because Accessibility, when I joined in January, was very much involved in talking about access from the standpoint of adhering to the guidelines. I think that there was an intent to want to make the website usable, but it focused some more on the guidelines and the World Wide Web Consortium standards and so on, and has moved to understand that there's a lot more to it than that to make the website world very usable.
I think Accessibility was always providing services. They just understood that now it's the time to provide the services from scale, and also from an educational standpoint. Accessibility understood that as people were looking out, looking at it as a company, as a thought leader in the industry, as a company who were able to work on and assist many websites, as we all know, it also received a bunch of heat from either the community or from members, or whether it's legit, not legit. Everything is legitimized in my book, so it's all fine. The Accessibility understood that it needs to do several things. It needs to provide education, or what we called free education or learning. And you mentioned the word access. One of the tools that is coming out as part of the company's culture called Access Campus, which its goal is to root and incept within the beginning of developers and marketeers' mindset how the digital assets of a website should be accessible. You mentioned usability before, Michael. Usability testing is a term that is taken from the user experience world, from the tech industry, from the development sphere. We now are trying to claim an accessibility and the claim to fame that usability is part of the user experience of checking a website. Needs to part of the QA of a website needs to be done with people, with what we a product or a service we like to call user testing. People with disabilities that are using system, as you mentioned in the beginning of the call, like JAWS, that are allowing them to view website and actually see if the digital assets are actually working are actually providing them with access. So Accessivity decided that it's going to work in a more holistic fashion. It's going to work on an educational spectrum, and that's part of the founder's vision to help people learn more about the field, to help people understand not just from a compliance standpoint, but how to create products and tools and services that are from the get-go are accessible. In addition, for everyone who needs to get up to par, Accessibility now through the Professional Solutions Department, the department which I am part of, the goal is to allow remediation of the rest of the digital assets that are part of your website and or part of your organization. If you are an enterprise who has files that are problematic for your workers that are supposed to read a remediated file, an accessible file, then perhaps you need that service. And I would ask you, Michael, when you tackle a PDF, when you tackle a file, are there any challenges that are in front of you, Chuck, in a media file, having a person unstoppable challenge? Taking on a file.
Well, sure. Which is, of course, the whole point of now what we're talking about with Access Flow. But yes, clearly it depends on the PDF. It's like with everything. There's always the answer. It depends. There are many PDF documents that are not readable by a blind person with a screen reader. There's more to it than what Adobe does with its own internal optical character recognition to recognize the information in the file. And sometimes that can be made to talk and give me the information that I want, and sometimes it can't. Likewise, with any website, sometimes it verbalizes well, and many times it doesn't verbalize extremely well, which means that I might be able to use the website, but it will take a lot of work to be able to use the website. Or the website was constructed in a way that really makes it very usable for me without a lot of effort. Someone put it very well when they once said, that what blind people learn how to do is to muddle through and break their way through all of the barriers that exist on websites so we can make them work. But a lot of times it's very difficult to make them work, or we have to spend so much time doing it that you wonder after a while if it's worth it. And that's, of course, what Accessibility is all about. And Accessibility, I think, Accessibility as someone recently said in a meeting I attended that Accessibility and other companies like it, but I'm specifically focused on Accessibility. Accessibility has two customers, and it's something that Accessibility, I think, has learned over the past many months, that they're the customers who actually buy the service, that is the website owners and the website developers. And so it's the business community. But the other customer that Accessibility has, which is just as much and probably even more important for the company to consider, is the end user. Because the end user is the person or people who actually have to use the product that Accessibility provides, or products that Accessibility provides.
Right.
And Accessibility has grown a great deal and recognized that second customer is extremely important. And in a way, it does pay the bills, because the customers who use that site that uses Accessibility and find it helpful are going to talk about it. And the community is pretty close-knit. So the reality is it's important to really focus on the end user world as well. And Accessibility has really started to do that, which I think is incredibly good.
Oh, I agree. Help bridging the gap with your end users, which they are the actual service recipient of the work that you're trying to accomplish, and getting their feedback is priceless and can be a great tool for progress, for change. And you can see it with the growth of the solution, with the current organic growth, and my emphasis on organic, on the solution department, because you get to understand why people come to Accessivy. I'll give you an example. There is a product that is a VPAT. It's a voluntary product accessibility template. That template is something that companies are now understand that they need to obtain, because the companies that are exploring whether they would like to do business with them wants to know if they are taking steps to become accessible. So the market, which is fascinating, because the market is doing the right affirmations to allow having the discourse of accessibility all around. And the service, when people come for accessibility right now with an organic growth to get the VPAT service, it allows us to understand that that organizations right now are taking an active role in trying to make sure that they are fixing and adapting and removing all of the barriers for people with disabilities, so they would allow to enjoy surfing the web properly and kindly and comfortably, which is most important. VPAT, manual audit, media remediation, file remediation, these are names of just aspects of the World Wide Web or the digital assets that Accessivy understood that it would do whatever it takes, a 360 effort, to make sure that its community will have a way not just to get into the website, but also use it conveniently and being able to actually, you know, scroll between everything, read the materials, and have an equilibrium, or bring everyone to the same level so we can all enjoy similar content.
What is your role at Accessibi? What is your job?
So my role is Chief Solutions Officer. I run the department of taking Chief Solutions Officer, and we have solutions and services under our umbrella. Some of the reason why we added the solution into the component is because Accessibi is working on providing every service to their businesses in a seamless and convenient fashion, like it did with the AI overlay interface. The convenience allows businesses to first to rapidly adapt technology and being willing to make a change for the better good. So one of the element of those solution, and the solution part, is where we automate getting a person from our website directly to our dashboard, allowing to facilitate the entire work and offload in a seamless and automated way, backed by Accessibi's AI power engine, and provide a service back to the client. Now, the service aspect comes into play. We are with our accessibility experts. This is a team of trained individuals, developers, that are doing the manual labor and have in touch and making sure to go to dot the T, to cross the T and dot the I around every single part of the website, that nothing will get, that no flow will remain untouched. So in comparison, perhaps, to previously, where our emphasis was on the AI engine itself and on the widget, while getting slowly requests for the other remediation services, now we are continuing putting our effort, the company continue putting its effort, as you know, Michael, on the AI interface. But simultaneously, it opened a full bridge to allow every service, every accessibility service that relates to the World Wide Web, to arrive in our into our door in our footsteps and allowing us to be able to remediate and fix and resolve the issue, whether it's just to bring up to compliance, but in most part, in my department, it's to make sure that the user will get a friendly experience when they get into the website.
And so I get the impression from what you're saying that could involve the AI powered overlay, but it also could come about from other services that Accessibe is or will be providing.
100%. And a person that should go over it. Now, when I say a person, there's two people that we offer as a company. We offer our own accessibility expert team that we trained in-house, create with our own syllabus and our own materials, and made them and brought them up to par with looking at IAP and other organizations to bring them perhaps even further down their proficiency route. So there's the accessibility expert who goes through the work themselves and are integral part of the service. In addition, there's also the technological effort that is being happening around the scene, continuing making a robust system that its AI capabilities would be able to do the majority of the job in order to flag the difficulties to the person that is testing it. Now, that is the first person. The second option of people that can test your website is a product or a service that we called user testing. User testing is essentially bringing in people with disabilities with their assistive technology devices, which, Michael, perhaps you want to share what is even assistive technology? Because I'm saying the word because I the words because I learned it. You are living it firsthand.
Well, I think it's exactly what it implies. It's technologies that assist in making it possible for us to accomplish tasks. So in the case of the web, for blind people, it could be a screen reader. It could be access to a Braille display. But it is technology that allows us to interact with a computer to get the information that others obtain by looking at a screen. So the assistive technology is my lovely Alexa decides to talk to me. So the assistive technology assists in helping to accomplish and perform tasks that we otherwise wouldn't be able to perform because they're visual. And that is like reading a monitor. So even the Amazon Alexa can in some ways be assistive technology. But the whole idea is that the technology helps us interact with our environment to accomplish the same tasks that you perform.
So that's exactly it. So our end users, that's exactly what they're doing. They are using their tools, whether it be a screen reader, whether it would be just scrolling through the keyboard by itself and see that the website is navigable and allowing the company at the end to see whether the website is actually user friendly, where with all the assistive technology, it leads you to share with the world, not just from the compliance standpoint, not just from a legal standpoint. I am opening my store for people with disabilities, and everybody are willing, and we are inclusive, and we're stopping no one at the door, and everybody are welcome to enter.
So, from a business standpoint, who and what companies are really the best opportunities for Accessibe to help make the website world more accessible?
So here we are talking about all types of companies, from small to big, from small, medium mom and pop store to big giants such as even Adobe or enterprises where they're public or private companies. governmental organizations, educational organizations can also benefit tremendously from working with us. The accessibility, what it did with those manual services, automated solution, AI-backed components, and having additional offerings to bring to the industry, it able to open up a full array of opportunities that are that can come from various angles, and they are coming today. We're seeing a group from groups of hotels that are reaching out to a public company in the US, to a flood of public companies in Israel. We're seeing various entities that are interested in understanding how could they now be better and provide better service, whether it's for the World Wide Web or even internal within their own organizations to get better in their hiring processes, to perform better in their internal training for employee adaptation. There's many aspects, as you will aware, to those services, and these are all being taken in under my department within that umbrella.
So there are companies that specialize in making websites more usable, accessible, or whatever. They have manual programmers that do that, and they've got a lot of expertise in it. Why Accessibi over those or other companies like it?
Accessibi is a company that is ready for scale, and that's something that is most important. How many websites, Michael, are currently unresolved?
Well, I think inaccessible. The statistics that I think that we have found is over 98%.
So even more, and 98% of how many? 100,000, 100 million?
I would say we're talking in the billions at this point.
So it's very simple. How many websites?
since we know, for example, from our own studies that there are over 380 websites created every minute in the United States. And out of those, we're saying that roughly 2% are accessible. That's basically 8 websites out of 380 every minute.
Right. So I'm looking at the numbers as I'm talking with you right now. I didn't want to make a mistake. In the US, there's 133 million websites. We're in the millions.
Right.
And there is other countries with other numbers. But the fact that we are not even meeting the surface, it's where we need to aim next. And there's so much work to be done. So Accessibi's ability to scale is not just a word for itself. It allows the company to serve many entities at the same time. Scaling is not just tech. Scaling is operation. Mm-hmm. It means that if we need tomorrow to hire X amount of people, we have the processes in place, the infrastructure in place, and the capacity to do so. It means that the company as a whole is working to grow and having with the bandwidth to gain all everything in it. In addition, and that's something that our visionary CEO and is able to create, he constantly create ways to simplify from a technological standpoint the entire process of fixing a website or building a website. And that allows us as a company to have, whether it's internal proprietary tools to provide the job quicker. So our turnarounds or our turnovers are much quicker than other companies, because we are building internal tools to help us get to where we want to be. And you know what? This is a big problem. The more companies that are entering the domain, that are trying to make the world a better place, we all win. So instead of comparing between the companies, we are in a joint effort to make sure that more and more companies would enroll together, that this 100, that the 2% would be 98%. And then we can fight over the 2% together.
Yeah. Yes. And the reality is that none of the companies that are involved in this whole process of making websites usable are or should be the enemy of consumers. And I know you mentioned before there's been a fair amount of heat that has been brought to bear on AccessiB to, I think, a greater degree than maybe some of the other companies, but the heat has been there. And there's probably been some justification, but there's also been a lot of misunderstanding. And I think that and I've said it a couple of times, I think that what's most important is that we as a community of persons with disabilities acknowledge the transformations that are taking place. AccessiB is not the company, both in messaging and in action, that it was 10 months ago. It is different today. It is doing a lot more. It is doing different things. And I think that's extremely important for people to recognize the very fact that people like you are here. You mentioned, by the way, that we are as a company, and I say we because I am the chief vision officer for AccessiB, as listeners know. You mentioned that we look for people who can help with usability testing and helping us to make the website more accessible. How can people explore doing that? Where would they go? Who would they contact, or what would that process be? Do you know?
So again, parts of our CEO's vision is to our chief marketing officer and our CRO is to be able to support the community. And the way that we currently understand that the community gets supported is through the various umbrella organizations, such as the NFB that you mentioned before, and allowing and then working in collaboration with these organizations that not necessarily NFB because they do not, I didn't see that they were providing it, but organizations that provide that facilitate the onboarding and recruitment of these type of individuals, that some of say that those individuals we are bringing into, we are opening roles within the U.S. market, within the New York office for people with disabilities, to work with people with disabilities closely, to allow us to have not just saying the word inclusion, but also living it firsthand. So what they can do is they can go to our website and reach out through various ways, through our emails, to the solution department, and we would love to have a conversation with each individual, either direct them to the right local organization in their place. We can work with the umbrella organization or work directly with them.
And I think that's important to note that there are ways that people can reach out. So people can go to www.accessiB.com. AccessiB is spelled AccessiB.com. And as listeners of this podcast know, they can also reach out to me if they would like, Michael, MichaelHi, at AccessiB.com. And I'm glad to help steer people to the right place or answer any other questions that people have on the podcast. I think we're getting close to our time, but is there any last thing that you would like to say or any point you'd like to make?
I enjoyed this conversation with you, Michael, immensely. I think that I would probably finish with AccessiB is growing and changing as a company, just maybe echoing the last thing you mentioned. in ways that I haven't seen any other company grow. And I sit on various role advisory roles or board roles in different companies. There is a sense of fulfillment waking up in the morning and coming to the company. There is ongoing communication that is day by day becoming better and better between the various departments, working as a right organism to provide service for the industry. There is an immense care for the community. It's what people are waking up for in the morning and are trying to see whether the community was happy today, was dissatisfied today, and how could the community feel better. And there are main efforts that are being done to take care of that on day-to-day basis. The company is also taking into consideration the business aspect and then working on providing additional services, additional solutions, providing additional automation, enhancing and improving old processes or older processes that can now become better and are now better. And we are open to whoever wishes to come and receives type of each one of those services to come to us. We'll see how seamless, how short it is than what they are expected to, and how we are keep evolving and growing as a company for both our end users and our customers, which is wonderful to see. It's wonderful to see and be part of.
By the way, I would also say that if any of our listeners, if you are a person with a website and you want to see how accessible your website is, go to www.accessibe.com. And there you will see a link to something called ACE, A-C-E, which is the accessibility audit tool that you can run, plug in the name of your website, and you can get an audit that will show you how accessible your website is today based on the guidelines and standards that exist in the world. And it will show you the things that you need to improve upon. So it will give you a good idea. It is totally free. And if you want to work with Accessibe, then the contact information is there to do that, to explore working with Accessibe and letting Accessibe help you make your website more usable. And for consumers, you can go and check any website as well with ACE. So we do invite you to do that as well. Well, Gal, I really appreciate you being here. And we didn't talk about the fact that GAL stands for wave, like the wave in the ocean. You said that typically Israeli names have meanings other than being just names.
Right. Hebrew names.
Hebrew names.
Right. Right.
Now, if I talk to enough people, I'll learn some Hebrew that way, I guess, huh?
For sure.
Well, I want to thank you again for being here with us, Gal Vereket, and definitely we will have to chat some more and compare some more stories. But thank you for being here on The Unstoppable Mindset. And I hope everyone will tune in next week. And of course, if you liked this show, please give us a 5-star review with your podcast host of choice or wherever you listen to podcasts. So thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time. You have been listening to the Unstoppable Mindset podcast. Thanks for dropping by. I hope that you'll join us again next week and in future weeks for upcoming episodes. To subscribe to our podcast and to learn about upcoming episodes, please visit www.michaelhingson.com/podcast. Michael Hingson is spelled MichaelHingson. While you're on the site, please use the form there to recommend people who we ought to interview in upcoming editions of the show. And also, we ask you and urge you to invite your friends to join us in the future. If you know of anyone or any organization needing a speaker for an event, please email me at speaker@michaelhingson.com. I appreciate it very much. To learn more about the concept of blinded by fear, please visit www.michaelhingson.com/blinded by fear. And while you're there, feel free to pick up a copy of my free ebook entitled Blinded by Fear. The Unstoppable Mindset podcast is provided by AccessCast, an initiative of Accessibe, and is sponsored by Accessibe. Please visit www.accessibe.com. Accessibe is spelled A-C-C-E-S-S-I-B-E. There you can learn all about how you can make your website inclusive for all persons with disabilities and how you can help make the internet fully inclusive by 2025. Thanks again for listening. Please come back and visit us again next week.